morning and welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, your midweek, mid-morning source for news and public affairs with a local perspective. I'm Shelley Reback, and I'm glad you're joining us this morning. What a week we've had so far in Tampa Bay. Lots of news and lots of dangerous proposals still percolating in the legislature. I can already tell I'm going to be a little cranky about the news this morning. First, supermodel Gisele Bündchen's husband is retiring. That's sad for Tampa Bay, of course. Everyone loves a winner. But come on, how is it that so many Americans know everything about sports? They're armchair football experts. But ask them to name their representative in Congress or state senator and they're just lost. And yet they have so many complaints about our country and our democracy. And they're bringing their complaints to Tallahassee this year, seeking ever more outrageous and anti-democratic measures. Critical race theory has already been banned, and now a bill banning making white people feel bad about racism has advanced in the Florida legislature. No, that's not a joke. I'm not kidding. That's the bill backed by Ron DeSantis that would ban public schools and private businesses from inflicting discomfort on white people during lessons or training about discrimination. Who's the snowflake now, Republicans? Is sticking your fingers in your ears and yelling, la, 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 I can't hear you when the topic of race comes up not working for you anymore? It's nothing but white fragility dressed up as a law. We talked about all the problems with that bill last week with representatives of our local teachers union. You can listen to that show and all our shows on the WMNF Midpoint webpage or listen on our podcast wherever you get your WMNF podcasts. Also, DeSantis now has a plan to establish a political police squad to investigate non-existent election fraud crimes at a price of $5.7 million of our tax dollars. That is still out there, although that one is not currently headed to a vote in the legislature. Just wait. And as the nation waits to see if the United States Supreme Court will ignore precedent and overturn Roe versus Wade, which of course is the case that legalized abortion throughout the United States, that's a reversal which seems highly likely now, by the way, since the court has moved to the radical right ever since Senate Republicans stole Barack Obama's judicial pick in 2016. But now the Florida Republican lawmakers have advanced a bill that would ban access to abortions in Florida after 15 weeks of pregnancy. That bill jumped another hurdle on last Thursday evening when members of the House Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee voted 10-5 in favor of the bill, which is called House Bill 5. But not before the crowd at this committee hearing, many of whom were student activists, erupted in chants of, "Let us speak, let us speak," when committee chairperson Representative Brian Avila, a Republican from Miami Springs, cut off all public comment. Now, currently, abortion is legal in Florida up to 24 weeks of gestation. It is only allowed beyond that if the pregnancy threatens a woman's life and physical health. The proposed new legislation states, a physician may not perform a termination of pregnancy if the physician determines the gestational age of the fetus is more than 15 weeks. The new bill does include exceptions if the mother's health is at risk or if, quote, the fetus has a fatal fetal abnormality. But currently, there is no exception in the bill for rape or incest. That is the bill that will now head to one more committee before it can be voted on in the full House. Now, clearly, this legislation will have its greatest impact on women who are too poor to travel to another state to obtain an abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. It will probably have a disparate impact on women in minority communities, immigrant cultures, and on youth, particularly youth who are victims of incest or sex trafficking. What do you think, WMNF listeners? Do we need more abortion restrictions in Florida? Do you support a post-15-week ban on abortions? Why or why not? Give us a call at 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text us to 813-433-0885. We'll be talking about this latest proposed legal restriction on abortion rights today with my guests. First, we have Dr. Robin with us on the phone. She is an OBGYN, a woman's health medical doctor, and an abortion provider with a local Planned Parenthood affiliate. I should mention that we are using first names only with some of our guests today because abortion rights is a subject that drives some people crazy, and we need to protect our pro-choice medical professionals and our community from any possible aggression. With that sad introduction, let me welcome Dr. Robin. Thanks for being with us, Robin.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
And in the studio with me is lawyer Laura, who is certified in juvenile law and who has researched the history of abortion laws in Florida. Thanks for being here, Laura.
Thank you.
And a little bit later, I'll be bringing into the conversation on the phone lawyer Rinky Parwani, who represented Tampa Jane Doe, a juvenile and a minor who sought through the judicial system a court order to receive information about abortion and permission to have an abortion if she chose to have one without her parents' consent. She was initially denied this relief by Hillsborough County Family Court Judge Jared Smith on the grounds that her GPA was too low. That order has been reversed by an appeals court who granted her that permission. Let me start with you, Robin. Last week, the media reported that a Planned Parenthood affiliate in Fort Myers was attacked by anti-abortion activists. And on Sunday, we had Nazis demonstrating in Orlando. Are you seeing an increase in these types of incidents lately? And how is Planned Parenthood holding up after these incidents?
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. That was a very scary time for all of us last week.
Yes.
Everyone is safe. We are, pretty much nationally seeing an increase in either protest activity, violence, threats against either abortion clinics or abortion providers. And I know you mentioned the Nazi activity in Orlando. We have actually seen, looks like a correlation. It tends to be some of the same people that promote violence that are in the same type of white supremacy group.
Yeah, we haven't seen Ron DeSantis's forces coming forward, given his new anti-protest law. We haven't seen that used against any of these people yet either, have we?
Yeah. No, we have not.
Yeah. So what would this proposed legislation banning abortions after 15 weeks, what would that mean for women seeking abortions in Florida? Like, who are the people getting abortions now after 15 weeks of pregnancy? What type of people would this impact?
Yeah, so people of all sorts of races, ethnicities, incomes, the people that would be most affected are going to be those that already are struggling and that are being marginalized because they won't be able to go out of state for an abortion. Approximately 10% of abortions that are provided are over 15 weeks. And, you know, one of the most common reasons women or a person may get an abortion later in pregnancy is that they just don't know that they're pregnant. They might have irregular periods or on birth control, so they don't get periods. They just don't know that they're pregnant. And so by the time they find out in Florida, if this ban passes, they won't be able to get it.
Now, you know, how common is it? I guess when you say approximately 10% of abortions mm-hmm. are performed after 15 weeks of pregnancy, how common is it for those abortions within that 10% to be not related to a fetal abnormality? I know, for example, that amniocentesis, which is a test for certain fetal abnormalities, is often performed at 16 weeks. But the proposed law does have that exception for fetal abnormality. So I wonder if we know if there's statistics that would tell us of the 10% performed after 15 weeks, you know, how many are not related to fetal abnormalities? In other words, how many might be related to people who just don't know they're pregnant?
We don't have an exact percentage of that 10%. Based on what I see, it's still a good amount. It does not seem to be the majority, but it's still a very good amount, and I take care of quite a few fetal anomalies. And that's a really important point that you bring up, that the amniocentesis can't be done until 16 weeks. In addition to that, even if their prenatal testing was all normal, when they get an anatomy scan at 18 to 20 weeks, they could find something that may not be compatible with quality of life, and may want to choose to terminate at that point.
What does that mean? I don't know whether this is a doctor question or a lawyer question, but what does it mean when the law says that there's an exception for fetal abnormalities? Like, what is considered? I mean, certain things you know. I mean, anybody would just simply know what would be a fetal abnormality. I mean, you know, God forbid, tragic things, born without a brain or something like that. I mean, there are certain things that are just not debatable. But isn't there a gray area where, you know, what constitutes a fetal abnormality significant enough to suggest that it would be an exception to the law should somebody post-amniocentesis or after any other testing after 15 weeks want an abortion?
Yeah, so, oh, I'm sorry.
Excuse me? Are you with us?
So, yeah, I'm with you.
Okay. I know that's a tough question, though, and I'm not sure if it's a lawyer question or a doctor question. I mean, who makes that decision?
Yeah, so the law, as well, the law as it's written right now, it has to be two doctors that certify that it's a fatal. Like, they specifically say fatal fetal anomaly.
Ah, fatal. Okay, fatal fetal anomaly. Okay, so two doctors have to certify that that's the character of the problem. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And you're right that there's a gray area. There are things that are not necessarily fatal that one may want to terminate a pregnancy for.
Hmm. Okay. I have some other questions for you, Dr. Robin, but I want to bring into the conversation, we have Kelly from the Tampa Bay Abortion Fund with us. Kelly, you're on the air. What are your comments?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. The Tampa Bay Abortion Fund serves clients in Tampa Bay that face barriers to abortion access. So we see the most marginalized of folks, the rural folks that are coming a great distance and need help with transportation, the folks that can't afford the gas to get to their appointment, the folks that don't have a car to get to their appointment, really the low income and the most marginalized of our community. And what we see in our community, in our callers, is that the folks that will be affected are up to 25% of our callers. So although only 10% will be held, will be affected by this law throughout Florida, in the marginalized communities and the ones that already seek help with abortion access and already face barriers with abortion access, that percentage is much, much, much higher. So 25% of folks that are already having issues will have much, much more issues. And I also wanted to point out that the 15-week ban is completely arbitrary. The law of the state and of the nation is viability, which is generally considered to be 24 weeks. So
that's the current state of the law. You know, that may not be the law after this most recent case pending in the United States Supreme Court.
That is true, but it is the medical conclusion for the last 49 years that viability is the point at which a pregnant person would need to consider having an abortion. Prior to 24 weeks, there should be no medical or legal question about the right for bodily autonomy and their right to choose whether to continue with their pregnancy.
Well, let me just say this. Should that United States Supreme Court case that's pending now overturn Roe versus Wade, this whole 15-week ban would be kind of moot, wouldn't it, Laura?
No, actually, it wouldn't. And the reason is because we have a sweeping, robust right to privacy written into the state constitution. It has been held for more than 30 years. It's been there for more than 40. But it's been held for more than 30 years by the Florida Supreme Court to protect the right to the abortion in the absence of anything the U.S. Supreme Court says.
Okay, well, that's been one of the things that has protected Florida abortion rights for the last 40 years is that unlike the United States Supreme Court Constitution, which does not have a specific right to privacy in the Bill of Rights, the Florida Constitution does.
Yes, and it's very sweeping. If I may, I'd like to read it. It's short.
Okay, go ahead.
It just says, every natural person, basically everyone, has the right to be let alone and free from governmental intrusion into the person's private life.
Yeah, we're going to get back to that because I think that there's a danger of a slippery slope here with invading, the purview of the Florida right to privacy by instituting more restrictions on abortion. I mean, what's going to be next after that? But I want to let Kelly go. But before I do, the abortion fund, the Tampa Bay Abortion Fund, Kelly, is an organization that is run completely by donations, right? There's no federal money or there's no grants available to the abortion fund. People make donations, and if the fund has sufficient resources, then you're in a position to maybe help with partial funding of abortions, transportation, and other logistics. So you're always looking for donations, and you're always looking for volunteers to drive people, for example. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely right, and we are looking for additional volunteers because we're anticipating come July 1st that the need, the increase in calls will be dramatic. We've been seeing an increase in calls since COVID hit in 2020, and so, yes, we are looking for an increase in volunteers, an increase in our help with our intake line and with drivers, and we do accept grants from a number of national organizations, not from the government.
No government money, though.
We are supported by the National Women's Law Center and the National Network of Abortion Fund.
Okay, if somebody was interested in contacting the Tampa Bay Abortion Fund, either because they want to volunteer, make a donation, or because they need services and they need help with resources, how would they make that contact?
info@tbafund.com.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate your call.
Thanks.
I do appreciate that. I want to go back to Dr. Robin for a minute. And before we move on to Dr. Robin, we were talking with Kelly about the fact that there is a great deal of need in the area for people who, as Dr. Robin mentioned, are people who have are challenged by poverty, for example, or youth who may not know they're pregnant. And we have with us Rinki Parwani, who's the lawyer for a juvenile, a minor, Tampa Jane Doe, we'll call her, who recently had to go before a judge in a procedure called a judicial bypass to seek the court's permission to receive information about abortion and, if she so chose to make the decision to have an abortion, to receive that abortion as a minor without her parents' consent. I want to bring Rinki into the conversation and talk a little bit about that. Rinki Parwani, you're on the air with us.
Yes, thank you so much for bringing this topic to the forefront of our community. It's so important, and I appreciate you taking such a tough topic and talking about it.
Well, that's what we do here. And if you're listening to Midpoint today and you have some comments or questions about the abortion issue and the proposed 15-week ban, do give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org or you can text us at 813-433-0885 and tell us what you think about this issue. Rinki, tell us about your case with Tampa Jane Doe.
Well, let me paint a picture of these cases for you. I mean, imagine that you are a 17-year-old girl or any young lady or woman, and you found out you were pregnant. And you need to confide in somebody and get help and get the resources you need to make good decisions, you know, for the rest of your life. And a lot of these girls are 16, 17 years old, and they have to come forward. They have to find the courthouse. They have to fill out paperwork, legal paperwork. They have to go in front of a judge. They have to be a witness. They have to tell their judge their age, convey their intelligence, tell the judge they're emotionally stable, basically go through their mental health history. They have to develop and appropriately dress for court. as a teenager. They have to show that they can accept responsibility. They have to explain the whole medical process and all the consequences of having an abortion. And they have to understand what that decision means and convey that to, you know, a third party. Plus, they have to talk to a lawyer. They have to do this in front of a judge who may or may not be a woman, a man. They don't know who they're going to tell this to. And they have to, you know, work with the attorney to convey this. This is a scary process. I don't think most adults
now, can. Now, let me stop you for a minute. You've elucidated all the things that the minor has to go through in order to get to the point of a judge even making a decision about their capacity to then make their own decision about having an abortion. But let me ask you first, let's back up to the beginning. How would a minor find you or someone like you? Now, I understand that the judicial bypass procedure is one that that a minor has to go through in order to get permission for an abortion in the event that she doesn't have her parents' consent, either doesn't have or can't ask or what have you. And so this is a circumstance that, you know, a lot of youth are confronted with when they are either victims of incest or victims of sex trafficking, for example. Or they just have parents whose own moral or religious views won't allow them to consent to their daughters having an abortion. So how would a minor even get to someone like you? First of all, you were a volunteer, right? You weren't paid, right?
Well, the statute 390.01114 provides an attorney for the child. So it is a court appointment. But, you know,
But how would they even get, I mean, how would they even find you? How would they even know that they are entitled to an attorney for this process? That's the part of the process that I've always been hung up on is,
sure,
you know, how do they
sure.
know that they're that you're out there to help them?
The forms at the courthouse, the clerk.
So they have to first go to the courthouse.
Exactly.
And ask for help.
About the process. They're not going to get me before they even understand the process.
Right.
And you know where our teens and all of us today get our information, right? Google.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so somebody has to make their way to the courthouse, ask for help, and then at that point, they're assigned an attorney, and presumably they're given your contact information, and they get in touch with you. And you were a volunteer, right?
I'm on the court-appointed list.
Court-appointed list. Okay, so that's where the person seeking your help does not have to pay you. If they're indigent, they get a court-appointed lawyer.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay, so then they contact you. So in this particular instance, Tampa Jane Doe contacted you. And was this, and I understand you're under certain obligations of confidentiality and you can't share with us everything, but was this a situation where the minor was unable to obtain parental consent because her parents just refused? Or, you know, was there some other reason? They were sex trafficked and couldn't reach parents, or they were victims of incest, or is there anything you can tell us about that without breaching confidentiality?
Sure. The published opinion, which the appeal court alleges that the parents had religious beliefs that wouldn't support her her having an abortion. So that was the reasoning the appeals court gave after reviewing the record.
Okay. All right. So then you went you prepared the minor for court. You went before Judge Jared Smith, who's a Hillsborough County Family Court judge here, and she told her story. She went through all of those factors that you enumerated for us originally. And at the end of that process, Judge Jared Smith made a determination that did not have permission to receive information about abortion. And she could not make the decision to have an abortion. And one of the grounds, if I read the opinion correctly, was that he thought her GPA was just too low, that she didn't have the capacity to make that decision. Is that right?
Yes. The circuit court asked what her GPA was presently. And, you know, I had asked what her grades were. And so, according to the appeals court, that whether that was her lack of credibility or whether that had hit the factor of overall intelligence. That's what the court took issue with. And, you know, I have to say, four judges have looked at this case, Judge Smith and three appeals court justices. We had them split down the middle, essentially, on the decision. So,
yeah, because the reversal of Judge Smith was two appeals court judges, the three judge panel, two appeals court judges agreed that she should have access to abortion if she chose, that she had the capacity to make that decision, and one judge dissented. And ironically, that judge who dissented, Judge Stargell, I believe it was, John Stargell, is the husband of Representative Kelly Stargell in the legislature, who is sponsoring this 15-week abortion ban. I mean, wouldn't it be appropriate for him to have recused himself from this case?
I think our judiciary is full of the best and the brightest, and I have the highest respect for anybody who sits on the other side of that desk. That's why I'm the advocate.
I won't put you on the spot of talking about judges before whom you may have to appear in the future. I won't put you on the spot about that. But I did note that that the dissenting judge in the Court of Appeals decision that reversed Judge Smith was John Stargell, husband of Kelly Stargell, and I think our listeners should just know that. That's a fact. So in the end, you were successful in having the lower court decision reversed. You did a great job for your client. You won the case. And where does she go from here?
Well, I mean, it's her ticket to get more information. If she chooses to have that abortion, she now has that. I mean, this is the second appeal of this sort that we have won in the last year. The last one we won was last May. We again had to appeal for another Jane Doe. And these are hard cases.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's difficult as the attorney. It's difficult as the judge. It's difficult as my client. It's absolutely tough stuff that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis and, you know, put all this out in the open in front of strangers to ask for permission.
Right.
I wouldn't want to be my client.
Sure.
I absolutely would not.
Well, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for taking on these cases because they are so hard. And, you know, the list of lawyers who have made themselves available to represent minors in these circumstances in the judicial bypass procedure is not large. And so, you know, you've really provided an important service to the community and on behalf of people who care about minors and juveniles and their rights, I say thank you, Rinky Parwani.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you for appearing on the show today. We appreciate hearing from you. I have a PSA that I have to put on the air right now, ironically, and a little awkward transition to talk about the fact that Valentine's Day is around the corner. I mean, could there be a more awkward transition into this PSA, really? But Valentine's Day is around the corner, and so is the I Love WMNF Pledge Drive. We really do hope that you'll support us early by donating at WMNF.org or by calling 813-238-8001, which is the admin number, during weekdays. The drive is February 14th through the 21st, but you can show your love for WMNF right now by calling 813-238-8001, and you'll love yourself for it. We just ask that if you make a donation because you like Midpoint and you like the issues that we bring up on the show, then please use the drop-down menu and allocate your donation to support the Midpoint show. I want to go back to Dr. Robin right now. Are you with us, Dr. Robin?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. One of the questions I had about this 15-week ban is how, if at all, does this interact with the availability of abortion medication? I know that the FDA recently relaxed restrictions on the abortion pill, and the FDA and the feds now allow women to obtain the abortion pill by mail, but only in those states where it's not illegal. So like Texas, for example, you can't be mailing abortion pills into Texas under the current more restrictive law. So under what circumstances can abortion pills be used in Florida, and until when in a pregnancy? And what's the process now in Florida for a woman to get access to the abortion pill, and would that change with this new proposed law?
Yeah, so thankfully this should not affect the abortion pill. So we can provide the abortion pill up to 11 weeks and 0 days. It is not as efficacious after that point. The process currently in Florida is the patient does have to come to the clinic and get the pill, which is called mifepristone, from a provider. So me as the physician have to be the one giving the patient the medication. So unfortunately, like you said, in many states, including Florida, the state law says the patient has to be in like face-to-face with a physician versus being able to be mailed the pill.
Oh,
we know,
okay.
And we have evidence of is very safe.
It is very what?
Safe.
I'm sorry. Oh, it's very safe. Safe. Okay. So they you have to be face-to-face with them while they take a pill? And then is there like a waiting period to see if they have a reaction or something, like when you get the shot for the COVID vaccine?
No, fortunately, there's not. And grateful for that, because there really isn't adverse reactions to the pill.
So that seems kind of silly and medically unnecessary, doesn't it, that a doctor has to be present when they take the pill?
Yes.
So I wonder if that's just one more hurdle that the legislature has placed between women and their right to reproductive health care, is just to make it more difficult. Someone from a rural area without transportation has to get themselves to a clinic in order to receive a pill before 11 weeks of pregnancy. That just seems unduly restrictive.
Yes, it absolutely is, because they're qualified themselves to take a pill by themselves.
Yeah.
So it is. It's just to restrict people.
Yeah, and women still need a prescription for birth control, for example, which also seems ridiculous.
Right.
But that's another show.
Right.
I guess.
The whole thing, yeah.
Right. So, all right, Laura, I'm going to turn back to you and this issue of the Florida constitutional right to privacy. But before I do, I just want to read one of our emails. I'm going to give it a abridged edition of this email because it's kind of long. One of our listeners, Laura, writes that the long-term impact of these abortion restrictions is not on society. It is on the mother, the father, and the families involved, who are clearly in the best position to decide their own options after receiving good available information to arrive at their decisions. Everyone needs professional input. Make it available. Politicians stay out of interfering. Follow the U.S. Supreme Court and hope that they represent all of us. But Roe versus Wade must represent and uphold all women's rights nationwide. That's from Laura today. We also have a caller who's been very patient. Anthony from Newport Richey. Anthony from Newport Richey, you're on the air.
How you doing? First, I'd like to say thank you for having this forum, this hard subject matter to talk about, and thank you for informing everybody, old, young, on the ability, because there isn't a lot of lawyers or doctors who advocate for minor children. And working with the Pasco family court law system, trust me when I tell you, she's right. It's an uphill battle, and it's not right. Roe versus Wade, in my opinion, should have an amendment that proves that it's a constitutional infringement on the woman to impose any restriction medically that she defines that she sees fit under the pursuit of happiness and liberty. It's a shame that our states and our country are acting like third world countries, in my opinion, to impose these things. And again, in my opinion, in my view, it's a constitutional infringement on a female. And it's not even fair, as far as I'm concerned, to see sexual orientation getting more of a front runner in discussion and all this versus gender equality and body freedom. Body freedom, your body. It's your body. You do as you wish. And the more information needs to be out there. So I applaud, much respect. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Anthony. We appreciate your comments and your calls, and we hope that you'll support WMNF and the Midpoint Show, and keep us on the air so we can continue to have difficult conversations and interesting forums like this. So thank you, Anthony.
Please keep up the good work, and please, doctor and lawyer, don't stop. Don't change for anybody. You guys are doing great work. Thank you so much.
All right, Anthony, thank you for your support. Okay, so Laura, the Florida Constitution, the Florida right to privacy, it has, as you said, protected the woman's right to make reproductive health decisions with her doctor, including abortion, up until now. But now we're in a position where it may be somewhat reinterpreted to permit more and greater restrictions on the right to abortion. But what I started to say earlier is, isn't this a possibility of a slippery slope? I mean, the right to privacy doesn't specify abortion, but it's one of the things that the right to privacy has been viewed to protect. If we invade the Florida constitutional right to privacy, don't we next, for abortion restrictions, don't we next have to worry about things like, what about contraception? You know, we could.
Absolutely.
You know, what about the what about same-sex marriage?
I'd like to make one point after having listened to what Rinky Parwani was telling us about that process for minors. That seems completely against what I said at the beginning of the program about the right to privacy. But here's the thing. The Florida voters did that to the minors. Before 2004, minors had equal rights to abortion as grown adult women did. In 2004, the voters, I voted against it, passed a constitutional amendment establishing the ability to do these laws and the judicial bypass. And it was approved by the voters, and that's why Rinky is having to do these cases today. Now it seems that the legislature believes they can take this right away from adult women without that process.
Without a constitutional amendment.
And that doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
And you're absolutely right that the right to privacy affects many other things. It has been interpreted to protect familial rights, marriage, all kinds of other things. In Florida, it's a little more complicated because we amended our constitution about marriage at one point, too, to be quite honest. But when the amendment was passed, a lot of the focus was on gay rights when it was passed in 1980. So it's a complicated story, but I do not understand how a judge takes the history we have, which is way stronger than what they have at the federal level, and has been said it's stronger, and as recently as 2017 they've reaffirmed, and somehow make this not be about adult women's privacy.
Well, you know, this is, of course, total speculation on my part, but it seems to me that the main reason why we're having this not only this discussion, but why these more restrictive laws are being proposed at this point in time is that there has been such an enormous shift in the judiciary. The United States Supreme Court, the makeup of it has totally changed since Mitch McConnell prevented Barack Obama from placing his United States Supreme Court pick on the court. Without justification, I might add. And the Florida Supreme Court itself, the highest court in Florida, has completely changed over the last
20 years.
Well, 20 years, but more recently with the retirement of some of the more liberal.
Pariente
and Peggy Quince have both retired. And it allowed our Republican governors to support, to make the Florida Supreme Court in their image now. And right. It's much more conservative. And so I think that, you know, the forces that want to have more restrictions on women's reproductive health now see a pathway to do that. They no longer see the highest courts in the land being obstructions to their, you know, political aims. And it seems to me that that's why we're seeing this now. I don't know.
It's true that that's what they think they can do. The problem is that the courts in Florida have held just the opposite. They have said repeatedly, even when the U.S. Supreme Court restricted abortion in Planned Parenthood versus Hood versus Casey, it was the Florida courts and the Florida Supreme Court said, but came back and said, no, we're not doing that. It's not good enough for the Florida Constitution.
Well, you know, again, though, that was a previous incarnation of the court.
That is absolutely true.
And so, you know, whether we'd get that same kind of opinion today remains to be seen. But what do you think, listeners? Can you imagine circumstances where a 15-week ban would be upheld by today's Florida Supreme Court? What about the fact that there's no exception in this proposal for rape or incest in this law? I mean, you know, it's hard for me to believe that even the most conservative of men, you know, don't support some exception for rape or incest. But that seems to be where we are, at least today. Let us know what you think. Give us a call at 813-239-9663. Email us at dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. I'm going to take a call from Doug, who's been very patient. Doug in Clearwater, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm going to try to keep it simple, but I got so much I could talk to you about. First of all...
Well, keep it simple, body. Doug.
It's a woman's body. She gets to do with it what she wants. You can't pass a law. You can't do that. I live about 3 miles away from what I believe used to be an abortion clinic. And I would drive to Walmart, and every Saturday... They would be out there protesting, and I wanted to stop, and I wanted to get out, and I wanted to protest against them, because I was like, you know what? Look, if somebody chooses to have an abortion, she's made a hard choice, you know, and it's her choice.
Okay, well, that it couldn't be more simple than that, Doug. I appreciate your comments. But, you know, that the Republican legislature that Florida has elected doesn't seem to agree with you. So just bear that in mind.
No, I
can't hear you, Doug.
I have no appreciation for the Republican state in this state. I don't have any appreciation for them.
All right. Well, I hope that you take that your opinions and your feelings and, you know, you turn them into action and you do whatever you think is appropriate to.
I do what I can, but I'll end it on this because I know you've got limited time for me to talk to you. But I'm just so, you know, nobody thought Georgia would flip and give us two Democrat senators. And they did. And now you've got Mnuchin, I call him Munchkin and Cinnamon. That's disrespectful, but that's what I call them, you know? Because they're holding up everything. And if they hold up Joe Biden, and look, Biden could do a little bit harder work for us, but...
Well, all right. We're getting a little off topic talking about the, you know, the federal stuff. But I appreciate your call, Doug. Thank you very much for calling in. And I hope you'll support WMNF and the Midpoint Show in the future.
I will.
Thank you. I want to take a call from Nancy in Sarasota. Nancy, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Thanks for your conversation and your guests. I don't understand the legal battle that's occurring right now. But as I've aged, I'm 58 now, and I have altered my opinion. I'm a Catholic person, and I'm a logical person. And I understand that there are laws that protect unborn children from...
Fetuses. You're talking about fetuses.
I'm talking about unborn children from murder. If people are held accountable for two counts of murder, if they murder a mother and an unborn child. And so logically, I'd like to know where legal, you know, and legal experts and medical experts draw the line between the rights of the unborn child. And I do call it an unborn child. I have two children, and I was never expecting a fetus. You admitted how awkward it was to talk about Valentine's Day after an abortion rights conversation. And to me, I don't understand why that's awkward at all, unless somebody is thinking that abortion is a form of birth control.
Well, I think that the source of the law is that the law has determined up until now in Roe versus Wade that there's a point at which a fetus is viable and there's a point before that at which it isn't. And that has been the legal demarcation for the right to abortion since Roe versus Wade. And that's the answer, the simple answer to your question. Now, you know, people can have moral disagreements over whether that is appropriate, but that is the answer. That is the law. That's the status of the law.
Then when a person is held criminally liable for murdering an unborn child, is it the same 15 weeks?
No, it's whether or not. First of all, I'm not sure what laws you're talking about that will hold someone responsible for murdering an unborn child or a fetus. But I can tell you that under the law, there is a particular point in time that the law has determined is 24 weeks after which a fetus becomes viable, and that's the status of the law. There's a demarcation at that point.
Thank you for clarifying. That's currently the law. What I'm saying is, from a person who has said, "Well, it's her body, and you know, abortion isn't for me," but that person has a right to. I have come to an opinion that an unborn child is an unborn child, whether it's viable. To live outside of the mother's body, that's something, you know, the law has clarified.
Yeah, that's a critical issue, you know, in this discussion.
But I don't think it applies in murder when a woman who is pregnant, and that happens regularly. And I'll email you if you want some documentation on two charges of murder when a pregnant woman is murdered. So logically, you know, if that fetus wasn't viable, that unborn child couldn't live outside his mother, it still has a right.
Well, you know, we can't talk about that without more facts. I'm not going to debate with you those cases of murder because I don't know anything about them. I don't have enough facts. But I will say thank you for your comments. And, you know, I appreciate you explaining where you come out on the issue. You know, listen, views that are different from mine or those expressed by guests on the show are always welcome as well. So I appreciate your call.
Thank you so much for your time, and I'll do my research as well.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, we have a call from Victor in Pinellas Park. Victor, you're on the air.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you for taking the call with the person that you just spoke with. It's great that people with differences of opinion can speak in a civilized manner. I think society needs more of that. My opinion about the subject really shouldn't matter. Being that I'm a male, I can never get pregnant. And the fact that so many laws are made by elderly white men telling other people what they can and cannot do, there but for the grace of God go I. I could never imagine how horrible it would be to be faced with, let's face it, it's a medical condition. Pregnancy is a medical condition that could result in your death. Women die every day in childbirth around the world.
Yeah, let me stop you for a second there, Victor. We have Dr. Robin on the line. Are you still with us, Dr. Robin?
Yeah.
Isn't it a fact that, like, childbirth is more dangerous to women than a safe and legal abortion? Statistically, I mean.
Statistically, yes. It's something like 7 times more likely to cause morbidity and mortality.
Okay, well, there you go, Victor. That seems to validate your claim.
I respect the lady's opinion, and if somebody has that belief, by all means, if you believe that abortion's wrong, don't have one. I can respect that, but don't tell other people what they can and cannot do.
All these
laws are being created by men telling women what they can and cannot do. Be careful, because you're going down a slippery slope. Once upon a time, women couldn't vote in America. Start taking away people's rights, and before you know it, you won't be driving or being allowed to receive an education. Dangerous territory.
Right. We'll be Florida, Stan, like Afghanistan. All right. Well, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it. I've got Jeanette on the line from Gulfport. Jeanette, we only have a very, very short time, so make it really quick.
I just wanted to ask the question of why they need to know what this young girl's grades were as far as whether she can make a decision whether she wants to have an abortion or not.
Well, I think that Rinky told us that was one of a number of questions that was asked of her to determine her capacity and her level of maturity to make a judgment on such an important issue.
Yes, but I understand that, but I also don't understand how we can judge somebody by their grades. Who knows what her circumstances are? And the other comment is that how can we know if she's going to be a good mother or not? I mean, we don't
license people to be parents.
But,
you know, anybody can have a child. Anybody can give birth to a child. And
I mean, you have to know all these things to be hit before you can make a decision to get an abortion. But you don't need to know anything to be a parent.
Right. There's no driving test for parenthood.
Exactly. So
yeah.
Why are they judging whether she's capable of having a child?
Well, I think like Laura pointed out to us that was the constitutional amendment that the voters of Florida passed.
To
impose this very onerous procedure on minors who want to address their own reproductive health. It was, you know, this was done through a constitutional amendment. It wasn't actually even done by the state legislature. So this is something that, you know, we need to talk to neighbors and voters about.
I don't understand if they have an amendment like that, how we can't overturn it.
Well, I think you need another constitutional amendment to overturn a constitutional amendment, don't you, Laura?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the thing. And right now, the state legislature is also trying to pass a law that will restrict citizen initiative constitutional amendments in the future and make it more difficult and practically impossible for citizens to initiate some sort of constitutional amendment. So,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well,
so, thank you, Jeanette.
Like your program today, because we have to expose what's really going on.
Thank you very much for your call, Jeanette in Gulfport. We appreciate you and appreciate you calling in and your support for WMNF and the Midpoint Show. I've got to pretty much wrap it up here. I want to thank all my guests today. We have Dr. Robin from Planned Parenthood. We have lawyer Laura. We have lawyer Rinky Parwani and Kelly from the Abortion Fund. I want to thank you all for being with us today. I also want to thank my sound man, Lamar Robinson, who brings us the sound each Wednesday at 10 o'clock on Midpoint, and the fabulous Frank Knox, who is volunteering on the phones today to take your calls. Special thanks to all of our WMNF listener supporters who keep us on the air. As I said earlier, we are having our fun drive on Valentine's Day week, and we hope that you will make a donation to support WMNF and to support the Midpoint Show. We'll be back next week with another controversial topic and more excellent guests. And now I would ask you to stay tuned for Duncan Strauss and Talking Animals. This is Shelley Reback for WMNF Tampa.